Thank you for calling the That Would Be Rad hotline. We are sorry we missed your call. Please, leave your story of rad strangeness, and Woody and Tyler will get back to you as soon as possible. Listen for the beep and be rad.
G'day, That Would Be Rad. Tyler and Woody, this is your mate Matt, also known as Mattman, in Sydney, Australia, in the land down under. So I'm just recording my story of high strangeness, or I would say alien encounters or encounter. I would have been probably 11 or 12. I lived in a suburb of Sydney, a place called Cheltenham. And it was a hot, balmy day in our summer, which would have been October and November. It was definitely in October, November, because it was just after my birthday. And I was riding my bike with a mate of mine on our road outside of my house. Probably would have been about 11 or 12. So this was in the late 80s, probably, you know, maybe 88, 89. Anyway, so it was a Saturday afternoon. He and I were sitting on my road riding a bike, and it would have probably been about 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. And I had a road that looked on a dead end that looked out over bushland at the bottom and over a small valley on the other side. There were other houses in suburban Sydney. My road had a view over a valley is the best way to describe it. And on the horizon over the other side of that valley, we looked up, and all I can best describe what we saw, and he and I have discussed it many years over now, is what you guys call them. We call them a blue bottle. But they're often called a Portuguese man of war, which is kind of like a jellyfish with tentacles that hang down, with a balloon type thing on the bottom. I've had a discussion, was it the Goodyear blimp? Was it a helicopter? It was something that was very irregularly shaped, and it had what it looked like as tentacles hanging down. Really big, but we were seeing it on a distance. Now, I'm nearly 45, and even now I can remember visualizing where I saw it and what it looked like. We turned to look at each other, and we were going to run in and grab parents, and by the time we got back, it was gone. And he and I talk about seeing that image in the sky regularly. Both he and I saw it. I should get his... I might email this to him, get his, whether he has anything to add to it. His name's Mark. But I will. I'm going to email this to him and get him to add his little bits. All right, mate. Thanks for this, everyone. I hope that's interesting. We call them a blue bottle. Very irregularly shaped. And it had what it looked like is tentacles hanging down.
Hey, all you blokes and Sheilas, welcome back to your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, a podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all things paranormal, and minors in retro video games, tabletop RPGs, pre-internet mysteries, the land down under, and raising our kids to be half as cool as we were back in the 80s. I'm your host, Tyler Bentz, and this is your other host,
Woody Brown.
Barely made it through that one.
Well, I'm glad that you decided not to do the Australian accent, and dude,
God, let me just say,
I mean, can I just say something here? And I know I've said this before. The Australian accent is just the coolest accent that exists on planet Earth, man. It's like immediately 100%. I'm just jealous of anybody that has one. I mean, it would literally, like, yeah. I'll just give you an example. You would go from like a 4.5 to a solid 7 if you had an Australian accent.
Just by saying this.
How the hell are you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 100%. So what you guys just heard was our dear friend and listener, Matt, from Australia, mm-hmm. who sent us this incredible personal story, you know, a while back. But we've been waiting for the perfect time to feature it, in addition to kind of this topic of just UFO experiences in the land, well, in Australia. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing that we say all the time is that, you know, for some reason, Australia has always held sort of like this mystical,
oh yeah,
mysterious vibe mm-hmm. for us, mm-hmm. just because there's so much, frankly, that we don't know about it, you know, personally. I mean, I used to live pretty close to there. I've been to Australia a couple of times, but, you know, it's just one of those things that it just seems like a real cool, I don't know, source of mysterious events. And so we've been wanting to do this for a while.
Oh, yeah. I am exactly right there with you, especially something about like the Aboriginal, like the concept of like the dream time. Mm-hmm. And like I have a brother-in-law who's Australian as well, but there's just this like sort of wild and like mm-hmm. untouched untamed, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, untamed. That's
and better. Like a wealth of lore that we don't, you know, you and I both, I think I can speak for you in this, like we're fascinated by any kind of lore in general, like whether it's like mm-hmm. spiritual or ancient, whatever it is, magic, whatever it is, we're super mm-hmm. fascinated by that. And we're still exploring our own sort of Native American and indigenous kind of lore that exists where we live. But man, when we mm-hmm. discover other belief systems and other like cultural, like
anthropology.
Around, yeah, like anthropology around the world. And stuff. It's just, man, we yeah. dive in and it's captivating for us. And so, you know,
yeah.
Matt, thank you so much for sending that.
Also, thank you for kind of serving as the genesis to these next two episodes.
Yeah, exactly. What we wanted to do this week as a part one is basically really focus on these stories, these events that kind of captivated our attention when we started diving into UFO phenomenon and things basically up in the sky in Australia. Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking about a place that has like some of the deadliest animals on the planet currently. And so to think about them seeing different things or you know, really unique things in the sky, well, that pointed us in the direction to do this episode. So, or these episodes. So we're going to focus on these stories. So we want you listeners to sit back, relax.
Put a shrimp on the bobby.
Put a shrimp on the bobby and keep your eyes on the skies as we journey to the land down under.
West of Eucla early yesterday. Mrs. Faye Knowles and her three sons say their car was chased in the night by a giant glowing. The car was picked up, they say. Police have confirmed that ash from somewhere was found on and in the car.
Traveling across remote areas in the dark, early morning hours can be eerie. Something about those pre-dawn hours seems to hold a strange energy that we've all sensed before. It's almost as if the possibility of a strange encounter is around each and every bend of the road ahead, just beyond the headlights, waiting somewhere out there in the dark. Early on the morning of January 20th, 1988, the Knowles family and their two dogs had an unexplainable experience while traveling across the Null Arbor Plain, a flat, almost treeless, arid area of southern Australia. It was about 4 a.m. and seemingly extra dark that morning. Faye Knowles and her three sons, Patrick, Sean, and Wayne, were somewhere between Madura in Mandrabilla, Australia. Sean was driving with Patrick next to him in the front seat when suddenly a bright light was seen just ahead of them. Sean, immediately curious, thought that a light like that, so bright and out in the middle of the country, was very strange. His first thought was to ask his older brother Patrick if he thought it was some sort of spacecraft. Like most older brothers, Patrick shrugged it off and thought there was probably a reasonable explanation, but Sean's interest was piqued. So he stomped on the gas to catch up to the object and get a closer look. As their car got closer to the object, the radio began to malfunction, and the family reported being confronted with a white, blinding, self-contained light that moved along in front of their moving vehicle. It was about 3 or 4 feet wide, and they described it as a slightly angular egg in an egg cup shape with a yellow center. The object, which at first appeared to be either on the ground or hovering immediately above it, then began to move back and forth. Sean swerved the car to the opposite side of the road to avoid a collision with the object, but then he nearly collided with a station wagon coming in the opposite direction that was towing a trailer behind it. The object then circled around to the right side of their car and then appeared to give chase to the second vehicle moving in the opposite direction. The Knowles, understandably, were scared and quickly steered away from the object that at this point seemed to be following them. And to the Knowles, it seemed that this strange object was after them. No matter how fast they went, where they turned, or even how they tried to lose this mysterious object, it was still there. The radio still acting as if it had a life of its own. Then, momentarily, as it appeared to be above them, they heard a clunking sound and felt that the car was being pushed down by a weight resting on top of it. They couldn't believe it. It was on top of their car. By now, the family was absolutely frightened. They reported that the car was then lifted off the road. Although none of them were able to estimate for how long or how high, Mrs. Knowles, in pure panic, rolled down the rear window and reached for the roof. She felt something soft and rubbery that was hot, but did not burn her hand. And when she brought her hand back into the car, she found it covered in a blackish dust. All three boys were panicking. Patrick rolled down his window, only to also be covered in this fine dust, which was accompanied by a very foul smell that he reported being like the smell of dead, rotting carcasses. A very high-pitched sound was then heard, which sent the dogs into a frenzy. The family became disoriented and felt that their voices had become slower and lower in pitch. At this point, they all believed that they were going to die. Patrick said that he felt like his brain was being sucked out of his head. And Mrs. Knowles likened it to having something going into their heads. An indiscernible while later, the family felt the car forced back down onto the road. So forcefully, in fact, that it caused the right tire to burst. Sean brought the car to a sudden stop and blacked out. The family then rushed out of the car as quick as they could and hid in some nearby bushes on the side of the road. They remained there for approximately 15 minutes before feeling it was safe enough to come out, change the tire, and continue on to the nearest town. Unknown to the Knowles, a truck driver named Mr. Graham Henley also saw, at the same time and in the same area, a strange light in his rearview mirror. He described it as being like a strong spotlight and like a big fried egg hung upside down. He kept the object in view for 5 minutes or so and didn't see any car headlights beneath it. Shortly after Henley pulled into Mondrabilla, he saw the Knowles car arrive and was confronted by the frightened family, all of them trying to describe frantically their experience to him.
We thought we were dying. All of a sudden, this thing's on our roof and pull my car up. We don't know what's going on.
So then it dropped you and you blew a tyre.
Yeah.
What happened next? Did you get out of the car?
Oh, I went down the window and I felt this thing on the roof, you know? And I said, gee, there's something on top of our roof. And I didn't know what to do. And I was screaming. And as soon as I said that, a little this smoke stuff come into the car. The car was covered in all black stuff, wasn't it?
Well, like grit or soot or ash.
It was like a soot.
He looked over their car and confirmed the presence of a black ash in various areas, both inside and on the exterior of the vehicle. And he likened it to fine silicone sand with a strange burnt odor to it. He also noted 4 indentations in the car's roof and the damaged tire. Henley and 2 of his friends also surveyed the scene of the incident, finding skid marks, footprints, and tread tracks that they felt confirmed the Knowles account. The family then spoke to authorities and police, who confirmed that they were visibly shaken that night. They also reconfirmed the presence of the 4 indentations on the top of the car and the fine dust. On that very same night, less than 200 miles away, a Tasmanian man and his girlfriend who were traveling down another empty road when all of a sudden the man heard a loud thump directly above their vehicle. For the next 15 minutes or so, he saw numerous bright white lights shooting earthwards from the sky as their car was battered by violent winds which blew items off the roof and even bent the antenna over completely. The witness stated that the winds continued for approximately 1 hour, blowing their vehicle all over the highway. "It frightened the living daylights out of me," he stated.
Police have confirmed that ash from somewhere was found on and in the car. A truck driver has corroborated the story, and 2 fishing boats in the Gulf have also reported UFO sightings about half an hour later.
"Wouldn't leave us alone."
"Well, did you... Who changed the tyre?"
"Sean changed. Took him 2 minutes to change the tyre."
"I bet it did."
"We left a jack and everything. We just left everything up there. We just took off."
"And at that stage, did you think you're involved with a flying saucer?"
"Yes, we really did. We said we're dead, you know. We thought we were really dying."
"If I said to you and one of your sons, if, say, Patrick had come home late tonight and said to you, 'Mum, I'm late because I was crossing the Nullarbor and a big giant thing picked up my car and shook it and dropped it again,' what would your reaction be if you hadn't been there?"
"I would say he was crazy."
"Had you believed in UFOs before this?"
"Never."
"Were you at all tempted not to tell the police because people may take the mickey out of you?"
"We weren't going to go, but we made up our mind to go, you know, because it might happen to someone else."
After these messages, we'll be right back.
"You got a light, buddy?"
"Yeah, sure, kid. There you go."
"And your wallet."
"Nick, give him your wallet."
"What for?"
"He's got a knife."
"That's a knife."
"America's future can be determined by our dreams and our visions."
"It was very intense, bright light."
"For over 200 years, there have been reports of giant, man-like creatures."
"From another dimension, another world, I don't know."
"The most intriguing mystery on the North American continent."
Hey, this is Bryce Johnson from the Bigfoot Collectors Club, and you're listening to Tyler and Woody on That Would Be Rad, because that is rad.
Is there any known traffic below 5,000 feet?
No known traffic.
Seems to be a large aircraft below 5,000 feet.
What type of aircraft is it?
I cannot confirm.
On October 21st, 1978, Frederick Valentich took off in his single-engined Cessna 182 from Moorabbin Airport, Melbourne, Australia. As he was flying along the Bass Strait at about 5,000 feet altitude, he told air traffic controllers in Melbourne that he could see a large aircraft below him and wanted to know if they were aware of any aircraft in the area. Melbourne ATC said there were no known aircraft in the area and asked if he could identify it. Frederick said he couldn't identify it, but it had four bright lights. The UFO then passed over him and appeared to be playing some sort of game with him.
Four bright, seems to me like landing lights. The aircraft has just passed over me at least 1,000 feet above.
He said that the object was a long shape, very fast, with a green light and a sort of metallic exterior, and that it was not an aircraft. The object was orbiting and then just seemed to vanish. The UFO then reappeared, approaching him from the southwest. Frederick reported that his engine was rough idling and coughing. Melbourne ATC asked what his intentions were, and he replied, "My intentions are, to go to King Island, Melbourne. That strange aircraft is hovering on top of me again. It is hovering, and it is not an aircraft." The last transmission from Frederick Valentich was at 1912 hours, and an alert was immediately declared. When at 1933 hours, it was evident that the Cessna 182 had not arrived at King Island, a full-scale search and rescue operation was launched. After 5 days of searching, no sign of the pilot or aircraft was found, despite the fact that the Cessna was equipped with a radio survival beacon. The weather at the time of this incident was clear with a trace of stratocumulus clouds at 5,000 to 7,000 feet. Excellent visibility with light winds. The aircraft was fully refueled with approximately 5 hours of flying time and was equipped with four life jackets. There had also been many UFO sightings from people before and after this incident. Whatever the truth may be, the fact remains that Frederick Valentich vanished in mysterious circumstances. Possibly UFO related, and that the mystery of his disappearance lingers to this very day. However, almost 36 years to the month that Victorian pilot Fred Valentich vanished without a trace, an independent researcher says there is evidence suggesting the 20-year-old Cessna was spotted in the sky over South Australia, attached to a UFO. The Victorian UFO Action Group once helped to identify a farmer near Adelaide who reportedly witnessed the 30-meter craft hovering above his property the morning after Mr. Valentich went missing. It is claimed that the Cessna was stuck to the side of the craft, leaking oil. The farmer even scratched the plane's registration number onto his tractor, but never came forward with the information because he was ridiculed by the few friends he told. This theory has sparked furious debate, but was this plane that was stuck to the side of a hovering UFO the same plane that belonged to Frederick Valentich? The mystery continues.
Is there any Air Force aircraft
aircraft in the vicinity.
No known aircraft in the vicinity.
Seems to be playing some sort of game. He's flying over me. Delta Sierra Juliet, it's not an aircraft. It's...
Can you describe the aircraft?
As it's flying past, it's a long shape. Cannot identify it. It has such speed. It's before me right now, Melvin.
How large would the object be?
Seems like it's stationary. What it's doing right now is orbiting. The thing is just orbiting on top of me. It's also got a green light and a sort of metallic light. It's shiny on the outside. It's just vanished. That strange aircraft's hovering on top of me again. It's hovering and it's not an aircraft.
Man, I love those stories. They're so sort of familiar, but also
extra strange, right? I mean, like there's an Australian flavor there. And like we cannot wait to obviously kind of dissect these a little bit further with you next week in part two, but also give you some more of the things that we found that are up in the sky in the land down under. I mean, it's just an incredible incredible place.
Yes, it really is. Well, we are going to get going, but...
But before we do, listener, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. I mean, not only do we just interact with folks and fill the week full of just sometimes random trivia about the 80s and 90s that we love, but also specifically, you know, post more about these episodes and we can dive even deeper heading down that rabbit trail of mystery and information and nostalgia. And Tyler, if the listener wants to be featured on our show like our buddy Matt just was, what is the best way for them to do that?
Well, like Woody said before, feel free to shoot us a DM over on Instagram, or if it's more long form, or if you would like to do what Matt did and send us a voice memo, feel free to shoot it to thatwouldberadpod@gmail.com. And already looking forward to next episode. So, like we always say, we love you, we appreciate you, and as always,
be rad.
That's the way it goes.
Hey, isms good, pal?
I am great today, mate.
Oh, boy. Terrible.
How the hell are you?
I mean, should you do the intro, the whole thing, you know? Should we just, in this episode, should we just speak in only an Australian accent? Your thoughts.
Oh, God, it would be so, so insulting.
Yeah, that's not, boy, it's not good at all, huh? Okay, let's roll.
Okay, where are we at here?
Man, you know, part of, whenever I ask, are you ready, it's, I don't have to listen on air. To,
well, because it's missing on this.
Let me
you did not this. Include. I'm trying to get the.
Maybe just write it down.
Okay,
it's
cool.
It's not
I don't know about that. Hey, all you blokes.
Do not do it.
Sounded like Oliver Twist. Hey, all you blokes and Sheilas. Let me do that again.
Yeah, yelling. Can tell it's going to peak. I can already tell. I've been waiting for the perfect time to feature it in addition to kind of this topic of just UFO experiences in the land, well, in Australia.
There's just something so, or 80s, I guess, technically, but.
Doing good already.
Jesus. You know, they're kind of classic UFO lore sort of. At the same time, but what am I saying here?
Just say, man, those stories were incredible, and I'll take it from there.
Man, those stories were incredible.
All right,
I did exactly like you.
Do it again.
But just like, yeah, it really is. Well, we are gonna get going, but first, where can we be found? Where can we be found? Is that right?
Where's the best place?
Yeah.
To find us. I don't know.